Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 418. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have another great episode for you this week. Let me introduce our guest to you. Rob Smith is a veteran, a journalist, an author, and so much more. He served for 5 years in the United States Army as an infantryman and deployed to both Kuwait and Iraq, earning the Army Commendation Medal and Combat Infantry Badge in the process. In 2010, he was arrested at the White House with 12 other LGBT activists in protest of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law, which barred lesbian, gay, and bisexual soldiers from serving openly, but he was later a guest of President Barack Obama at the ceremony that repealed the law. He has spoken about veterans issues and LGBT rights and empowerment all over the country. He's been featured on HLN's The Daily Share, The Huffington Post Live, Dr. Drew On Call, and CNN. He is a recipient of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association Award for Excellence in Blogging and the 2016 Gay City News LGBT Impact Award for multimedia coverage of issues impacting the LGBT community. His book, Confessions of a Don't Ask, Don't Tell Soldier, How a Black Gay Man Survived the Infantry Coming Out and the War in Iraq, is available right this very second on Amazon, and we're going to talk all about it. But first, Rob Smith, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So remind our listeners, at what point did you decide, yes, the military is for me?
At 17 years old, I am from a small town, Akron, Ohio. A very working class, lower middle class background. And after I graduated high school, I just wanted to get out of Ohio. And I thought that the military would be the best way to do so. I wanted to travel. I wanted to see the world. I wanted to eventually get the money to one day go to school. And that was the way I decided to do it.
Let's do a little comparison. What did you think your first day was going to be like in the military? And what did it actually turn out to be?
Well, I thought my first day would be just, you know, getting acclimated to everything and, you know, just very basic. And what it was the drill sergeant screaming in my face and calling me a fag.
Yeah. Did you second guess your decision at that point? How do you weather that storm?
Yeah, I think that was the first of about 2,000 or 3,000 times that I second guessed that decision. You know, it was a very intense experience, I must say, especially as a 17-year-old kid, especially as being the only black man in an entire platoon full of soldiers in the South, you know? It was very intense.
Yeah. We've talked when you were on the show last year. It's been a year since you've been on. So much has happened in a year. So folks should stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com and they can hear all of your reflections on Don't Ask, Don't Tell and your role there and being arrested and all that. It brings to mind this question, though, Rob, in taking a step back. What is the relationship between people serving in the military and the rest of us who are not serving in the military but talking about it constantly?
I mean, the thing about the relationship between people currently serving and us is that we're at a time, more so than at any point in American history, where the average American is so removed from anybody serving in the military that there is no connection, honestly. People talk about going to war. People talk about going to war in Iraq. People talk about the war in Afghanistan. People talk about going to war potentially with North Korea and all these other things. And it's almost like in their minds they're talking about toy soldiers, you know, on a game or something like that. And, you know, war isn't a game. These are real lives. And when we have an all-volunteer military, and the enlisted portion of the all-volunteer military really does come from people that have a poor and more working-class background. It creates this schism between the military and everybody else that's almost like, you know, the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah. Obviously, we're going to get more specific in a couple minutes about a specific commander-in-chief, but what is generally the relationship? I mean, are you aware of government action when you're in the military? Like, what is your relationship with the President of the United States?
I mean, your relationship is about, it's as deep as you want to be involved with, right?
Yeah.
It's as deep as what you want to seek out, the information that you want to seek out. In my experience, people in the military do tend to be a little bit more conservative, if not a lot more conservative, than people in the civilian sector. And I think it's just because military service will force you to see the world very, very differently, okay, than most people do. And when you have served in war and when you have served in the military, you see military action, you see issues like terrorism, you see those issues in a much, much, much different way than people in the civilian sector do.
Yeah. Why should all of our listeners, because it should be mandatory, but I can't make it mandatory for our listeners, Rob, but why should our listeners pick up Confessions of a Don't Ask, Don't Tell Soldier?
They should pick up Confessions of a Don't Ask, Don't Tell Soldier because it's Moonlight meets American Sniper. You've never read this story before. You've never seen this story before. You have never experienced this story before because it's never been written before. So I can guarantee that anybody who picks this up has never read anything like it.
Rob Smith has worked on his elevator pitch. That was apparent, sir. Well done.
Thank you so much. I'm glad my hard work is paying off.
It's a great thing. When someone finishes reading the book, when all of our listeners finish reading it and they close that last page, what do you want people to walk away with?
I want people to walk away with knowing that they just read a story of survival, but I also want people to feel empowered by this book. This is not a book about being a victim. This is not a book that's about bashing the military. This is not a book that's about painting myself as some sort of hero and painting everybody else as villains. It's not about that. It's about survival. It is about perseverance, and it's about tenacity. And I want people to feel good about the journey that they just experienced. And I also want them to, you know, reach out to me on Facebook, Twitter, so that I can keep, you know, so that they can keep up with everything that I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the things that I'm doing now are things that as a 17-year-old, you know, in the mindset of a 17-year-old that I wrote about in this book, there are things that I wanted to do, whether it be, you know, going into broadcasting, going into media, all that stuff that I'm actually doing. So read the book, follow me on all these platforms. I'm definitely out here in the journalism industry. I'm launching a podcast with Yahoo Finance in a couple of weeks. And I just want them to continue to take this journey with me, you know, via social media and via following my career path.
Yeah, we hear so much about people who leave the military and their struggle to find their voice, right, outside of the military. What was that like for you? You really are pursuing your dreams, which we love seeing.
I am. And, you know, it's very hard. It's very hard for some people coming out of the military because you're in a situation where all you have to do is show up, really. It's hard work, but you have to show up and do your job. But your bills will be paid. Your housing is covered. You know, your food is covered. Everything is covered for you. It's very hard for some soldiers to make the transition into a life where you have to fend for yourself.
Yeah.
It's very hard for some soldiers to do that, and everybody does not make that transition well. And I can't pretend that it's all been smooth sailing for me after the military as well, because it has not been. It's been a struggle. It's been a struggle to finish college, to pursue my dreams in media, to even get Confessions of a Don't Ask, Don't Tell Soldier published has been the culmination of what was, it's almost been a decade, you know, trying to get this thing out here.
Right. And then you had it all set, and President Trump said, you know what, I'd like to tweet something about trans people in the military.
Right. Oh, God. You know, so when I found out about Trump's tweet, I was on vacation in Fire Island Pines, and a CNN producer called me, and she said, you know, we need you to come on and talk about Donald Trump. And I was like, well, what am I talking about?
Right.
What do you do now? And then I Googled, of course, and I said, I was speechless. I didn't know how to react. I knew I was infuriated. I knew that I thought that we were done with this. I knew that of all the problems that our country is going through right now, okay, transgender soldiers serving is not one of them.
Right.
And it's just another example of this continued assault on LGBTQ people, on people of color, on African Americans specifically, that we've seen through this administration. It's terrifying. It's unfortunate, but this is the time when people really have to. This is a time that will show us what we're made of as a community.
Yeah. But we're being told, Rob, that the military is not at peak readiness because there are trans soldiers there.
The military is not at peak readiness for a lot of different reasons, transgender soldiers not being one of them at all.
Right.
The military is not at peak readiness because we have an all-volunteer force. We're leaning more and more on, like I said before, working class and lower income people going into the military to comprise the all-volunteer force. There's a lot of things going on with the military right now, and when you have transgender soldiers that want to serve, when you have people that know how to do a job, why would you turn away any soldiers willing to serve in an all-volunteer army that struggles with recruitment and retention?
I have to ask, does it make a difference at all that the man tweeting this has not served in this capacity, or does that not even matter?
Absolutely, it makes a difference that he hasn't served at all.
Yeah.
Because not only do you have Donald Trump, who, by the way, got, you know, I think multiple draft deferments not to serve, but that's indicative of a larger problem with the politicians that we have representing us and the politicians that we have sending us to these wars, is that very few of them have served. So many of them live lives that are sort of ensconced in this bubble of wealth and privilege, and they are so happy and so ready to send other people's children out to war.
Yeah. I also cannot have you on the show. You've done so much writing about race and racism within the LGBT community. Rob Smith, with his magic wand, what will we change immediately in that area?
Oh, God, geez. You know, when people talk a lot about race in the gay community, I'll just go gay community in specific.
Go for it.
When a lot of people talk about race in the gay community, they think that as soon as everybody, it's basically as soon as white men start finding men of color attractive, then that's going to be the magic wand that solves everything. I have never believed that at all. I know that I think that people are going to be into what they're into, and that's fine. I think we focus on that too much, that aspect of it too much in the community. I think we need to focus on why we do not have people of color in leadership positions within the community. Why are there so many LGBT organizations that still to this day continue to have a white guy or a white lesbian at the top, or a board comprised full of white people, or LGBT media organizations that have all white editors and all white journalists?
Like, right.
These are, I think, some of the larger problems with representation and race and ethnicity within the LGBTQ community. And I think that we sometimes want to simplify things down to talking about sex and sexual attraction.
There it is. Well, what is coming up that's exciting for you, sir?
I think what's exciting for me is honestly, I got a big thing for this book that I can't talk about. It's weird. I can't talk about it until after it's done.
Okay.
But you know, I'll share it. I'll share the video and everything. So that's big. Honestly, what's next for me is just making sure that as many people as possible get their hands on Confessions of a Don't Ask, Don't Tell Soldier, read it, tell all their friends about it. And I am going to, you know, do whatever I can do to get a movie made out of this. So I'm going to try to take this to Hollywood.
I love it. We would all watch that.
In the immediate future, I would love for you to. In the immediate future, I'm doing a lot of work with Yahoo Finance right now, and I'm launching a podcast called What the Media, which is all about media criticism and all of its different forms. And we're going to break down race and gender and all of these political conversations that we have through a media lens. And I'm really excited about that. That's going to be launching towards the end of the month on Yahoo Finance.
Yeah, as a professor who teaches almost solely about race, I will play that in class, Rob. I promise you that. So that's a good thing.
Please do.
Listeners, this is what you need to do right this very second. Stroll on over to Rob Smith Online. Line.com. That's robsmithonline.com. And you should right this second also pick up Confessions of a Don't Ask, Don't Tell Soldier. It's available on Amazon, on anywhere fine books are sold. But just go pick it up right now. What was it?
It was Moonlight Meets American Sniper.
Moonlight Meets American Sniper. I love it. Rob, you are an inspiration to all of us. You are using your voice to make a difference, and we love hearing it.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have so much time on this week's episode to go over all of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there, so let's get to it. Some really sad news to start out. We have lost a pioneer of our community, a pioneer of gay rights, a pioneer of moving our community forward. Edie Windsor has died. The lesbian pioneer's death was confirmed by her wife, Judith Kaysen Windsor. The cause of death is not known, but Edie Windsor was 88 years old. Edie Windsor, of course, was the plaintiff in Windsor versus United States, the landmark 2013 Supreme Court decision that gutted the Defense of Marriage Act, making federal government recognition of same-sex marriages possible. Windsor's first marriage was to Thea Speier. They became partners in the 1960s and were finally able to marry in Canada in 2007, but the United States did not recognize their marriage, with the result that when Speier died 2 years later, Edie Windsor owed $363,000 in estate taxes, which she would not have owed if she had been married to a man. Windsor sued the federal government for a refund, and the case went all the way to the Supreme Court, resulting in the 2013 decision. It is considered one of the most important LGBT rights cases in U.S. history. Edie and Thea, which is a documentary on the couple that made history, can be viewed at Hear TV. This is a quote from Kaysen Windsor, Edie's wife. Quote, "I lost my beloved spouse, Edie, and the world lost a tiny but tough-as-nails fighter for freedom, justice, and equality. Edie was the light of my life. She will always be the light for the LGBTQ community, which she loves so much and which loved her right back." Roberta Kaplan, Windsor's lawyer in her landmark Supreme Court case, remembers her as a, quote, "true American hero." Kaplan said this, quote, "Representing Edie Windsor was and will always be the greatest honor of my life. She will go down in the history books as a true American hero. With Edie's passing, I lost not only a treasured client, but a member of my family. I know that Edie's memory will always be a blessing to Rachel, myself, and Jacob. I also know that her memory will be a blessing not only to every LGBTQ person on this planet, but to all who believe in the concept of B'Tselem Elohim, or dignity for all." And the praise has come in from all over the place. And I want to cover so much of this because it's so important that we hear what everyone is saying about this unbelievable hero who we have now lost. Anthony Romero, who's the executive director of the American Civil Liberty Union, said this, quote, "Today we lost one of the country's great civil rights pioneers, Edie Windsor. The wheels of progress turn forward because of people like Edie who are willing to stand up in the face of injustice." Aisha C. Moody Millis, who's president and CEO of the Victory Institute, said this, quote, "Our fierce heroine Edie Windsor devoted her final years to her people, the LGBTQ community, and will be remembered as a seminal figure in our inevitable march towards equality." Sarah Kate Ellis, the president and CEO of GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, said this, quote, Edie Windsor is a legend who changed the course of history for the better. She touched countless lives, and we at GLAAD are deeply saddened by her passing, but her kindness, compassion, and legacy will endure. And the tributes just keep coming and coming. I do love this one. This is from Kate Kendall, the executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. Kate said this, quote, We are deeply saddened by the loss of Edie Windsor, a hero an icon for the LGBTQ rights movement. Many of us feel the personal loss of a tremendous friend and mentor whom we will never forget. She fought for dignity and laid the foundation for marriage equality. Her legacy will live on in history and be felt in the lives of our community for many years to come. So many other tributes coming in, but I have to tell you one more that came in, and that was from President Barack Obama. In a statement, the 44th president paid a personal tribute. He said this, quote, America's long journey towards equality has been guided by countless small acts of persistence and fueled by the stubborn willingness of quiet heroes to speak out for what's right. Few were as small in stature as Edie Windsor, and few made as big a difference to America. In my second inaugural address, I said that if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal. The day that the Supreme Court issued its 2013 ruling in United States versus Windsor was a great day for Edie and a great day for America, a victory for human decency, equality, freedom, and justice, and I called Edie that day to congratulate her. I thought about Edie that day. I thought about all the millions of quiet heroes across the decades whose countless small acts of courage slowly made an entire country realize that love is love, and who in the process made us all more free. Look at that. I thought about all the millions of quiet heroes across the decades. This has to make you pause, certainly to celebrate the life of Edie Windsor. Everybody needs to pause right now and do that. And you need to recognize, wow, this individual really did change our lives. But you also have to consider how it is that Edie Windsor changed our lives. She changed our lives by being herself. She didn't decide, you know, she didn't grow up, I want to be a hero. No. She used her voice to make a difference. That's what we tell you guys every single week to do. She used her voice to make a difference. And that's how heroes are made. I love that phrase that President Obama used. Millions of quiet heroes across the decades whose countless small acts of courage made an entire country realize that love is love. That was Edie Windsor, a true hero of our community and a true hero just by speaking up and saying, this is not right. What is not happening here is right. And she wanted to make a difference. And holy cow, did she make a difference? Of course, rest in peace, Edie Windsor. We will transition very awkwardly here to the Trump administration. I will say no tweets, no nothing from the Trump administration on Edie Windsor. We'll see at today's press conference if that is even mentioned. But the Trump administration has made quite a different decision as it comes to marriage equality. And it concerns a notorious Christian baker who is at the center of a landmark U.S. court case. That Christian Baker now has the backing of the Trump administration. Jack Phillips earlier this year claimed that Jesus Christ would discriminate against gay people. That's one of the things that he has said out there. Phillips owns Colorado's Masterpiece Cake Shop, which is at the center of a case over anti-LGBT discrimination that is set to be heard by the Supreme Court. Phillips launched a legal challenge after being found in violation of state anti-discrimination laws for refusing to serve gay couple David Mullins and Charlie Craig. The baker refused to make a cake for the couple after he found out that they were celebrating their wedding, and he continues to insist his religion requires discrimination against gay people. After 86 members of Congress signed a brief supporting his case, they signed it, as this is going to the U.S. Supreme Court, they supported his right to discriminate. The Trump administration, our presidential administration, has now also backed the baker. The Justice Department late last week filed a brief to the High Court saying it backs the Masterpiece Cake Shop. They did not have to do this, folks. But this is what they have decided to do, the Trump administration. The Department of Justice said that the ruling against the bakery could create an intrusion, an intrusion against the First Amendment, where a public accommodations law compels someone to create expression for a particular person or entity and to participate literally or figuratively in a ceremony or other expressive event. An official told BuzzFeed News the department chose to file the case because the First Amendment protects the right of free expression for all Americans. Although public accommodation laws serve important purposes, they, like other laws, must yield to the individual freedoms that the First Amendment guarantees. That's according to a Department of Justice official. The baker is defended by the hardline anti-LGBT law firm Alliance Defending Freedom, which has sought to undermine LGBT rights protections in a number of states. Though the Alliance Defending Freedom is framing the issue around a religious objection to same-sex marriage, their other cases show a much wider support for anti-LGBT discrimination. For example, they have sued a school district over a transgender non-discrimination policy and defended a t-shirt printer who refused an order from a pride celebration. But this is the Trump administration saying, wow, we need to support this anti-gay baker. They didn't have to do anything. And often, the Department of Justice does not weigh in on matters like this, but the Trump administration has said, nope, this is how we have to spend our time. So not only silence about Edie Windsor, but using their voice, the Trump administration, to scale back LGBT rights. That's where they are right now. Let's talk about our buddy Roy Moore. Gosh, more about marriage equality. Roy Moore, the infamous, disgraced former judge who is currently leading the pack in a U.S. Senate election. It's unbelievable. He has close ties to a pastor who has called for gay people to be put to death. Roy Moore, again, is running for the United States Senate seat vacated by Trump's Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and he has a lead over his GOP primary opponent. It doesn't matter, apparently, there to the voters in the great state of Alabama that this is a guy who has been kicked out of being a judge. He's not a judge anymore. He was Alabama's Chief Justice. But he was ejected from his role after abusing his authority in a bid to block gay weddings in the state. After the Supreme Court said, after all the amazing work of Edie Windsor and Roberta Kaplan and heroes of our movement to achieve marriage equality, Chief Justice of Alabama Roy Moore said, no, it doesn't apply here. And he was kicked out of being a judge. But that apparently doesn't disqualify you from leading the pack in the election to replace Jeff Sessions there in Alabama. Well, CNN reports that Roy Moore has appeared multiple times on a radio show hosted by Pastor Kevin Swanson, who is known for preaching that gay people must be stoned to death. GOP officials have been embarrassed over Roy Moore's ties to Swanson in the past, with Senator Ted Cruz forced to apologize last year for appearing in an event run by him. At that particular event, Swanson shouted, quote, yes, Leviticus calls for the death penalty for homosexuals. Yes, the Apostle Paul does say that homosexuals are worthy of death. His words, not mine. And he was screaming this, I am not ashamed. And Ted Cruz later admitted it was a mistake to appear at the event. However, Roy Moore, former Chief Justice of Alabama, but he was kicked out, Roy Moore's association with him is much more long-standing, appearing at least 5 times on Swanson's Generations radio show. He appeared as recently as February 2017, long after Swanson's views were known. In his appearances on Swanson's show, the pair both rallied against the gay agenda. In a 2015 interview that has just surfaced, Roy Moore refused to say, again, he is leading the pack, but just a couple years ago, he refused to say whether he supports gay people being put to death. Asked if gay people should be executed, he responded, quote, well, I don't, you know, I'm not here to outline any punishments for sodomy. That's far beyond any issues I've come in contact with. I can't help what some people say, what some people do. In 1960, every state in the Union had laws against sodomy, and in the beginning of the country, in 1776, all 13 colonies had laws against sodomy, so sodomy is historically against the law. Again, that is Roy Moore currently leading the GOP pack there to be a senator, an actual senator, one of the 100 senators. He would be representing Alabama. And just 2 years ago, he wasn't able to come out and say, no, I'm against gay people being executed. he wasn't able to definitively say that. I don't know what he would say now, but usually if you are a public official and someone says, should you kill these people who have done nothing wrong? Your answer should be no, I would not kill those people. By the way, this guy's gonna get elected. And at some point, once we get past the primary, right, and into the actual election, President Trump is going to endorse Roy Moore and talk about the many anti-LGBTQ things President Trump has already done. That will be near tops on the list. It's going to happen. It's going to happen in just a few months. We will all see it. Apple, the great company Apple, has announced its support for same-sex marriage in Australia ahead of this week's launch of the long-awaited iPhone 8 and iPhone X models. Before Tim Cook, the first-ever openly gay chief executive of a Fortune 500 company, announced the new Apple Store products, he signed off on a gloriously pro-LGBT statement. In doing so, he used the hype that's been building around the new phones for the greater good to promote the yes side of Australia's same-sex marriage vote, which begins this week. The statement reads this, quote, "We support marriage equality and believe all Australians deserve the freedom to marry the person they love and to have their relationships recognized with the same dignity and legal protections as their neighbors, friends, and family." Campaigning ahead of the Australian postal vote has featured homophobic hate speech in the form of posters, TV advertisements, and just plain nutty rhetoric. This has actually led to draft legislation, which means Australians could be fined up to $12,600 if they are found to be vilifying or intimidating someone because of their sexual orientation or religious convictions. It is just plain nutty there in Australia. So many leaders coming out and saying horrible things, which we'll get to in a second. But in a really nice move, Tim Cook there in Apple, using the launch of his new products, which everybody is raving about, or at least everybody's talking about. I don't know about $1,000 for a new iPhone. I have a hard time justifying that, but I make no judgments about how you spend your money. But Tim Cook using the launch of these Apple products to make a very public comment supporting marriage equality there in Australia. But on the flip side, so many leaders there in Australia saying horrible things. Australian anti-gay politician Pauline Hanson has accused gay people of wanting to remove the words mum and dad from the language. The right-wing senator, she's a senator, she said she would ignore a yes vote in this non-binding postal vote, which started this week. Ballots were sent out to 16 million citizens. This is one senator who's saying, I don't care what the people say, I'm not voting yes for marriage equality. Speaking in Parliament, the One Nation leader used the common no campaign tactic of scaremongering by conjuring up extreme social changes, which they say could be prompted by a yes vote. She actually said this. This is an actual quote from her. Have we considered the children? Yep. Have we considered the children? We're still doing fear mongering. She went on to say this quote, what may come of this is that kids go to school and teachers say, look, I want you to draw a picture of mom and dad. And then the yes people are going to come and say, sorry, you can no longer call that parent mom or dad because it's going to offend the children who don't have a mom or dad. So it's going to be, well, you must call that person by Peter or Anne or John and there's no longer moms or dads. Why won't you try and compromise? She said that to marriage activists. No, that is fear-mongering. And by the way, that's the case right now because not everybody has a mom or a dad, Senator Hanson. That's actually not the way families work. They haven't worked that way in a really long time. So voting yes on marriage equality is not going to change the fictitious example that you've conjured up where a teacher says, no, you can no longer call your mom and your dad your mom and your dad. That's not actually a thing. So a lot of fear-mongering there in Australia. It's going to continue. It's getting pretty heated over there. Oh boy, oh boy. And with that story, we are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with a ton more news.
Side of my future lies beyond the other bigger.
All right, folks, and we are back. And we still have so much more time to get to more LGBTQ news that's out there. Well, in the same way that we spent all of last year, I feel like it was every single week, we had another update for you from the wonderful world of North Carolina and their bathroom ban. Now I kind of feel like we can't go a week without giving you an update about those three tweets that President Trump tweeted that effectively banned trans people from serving in the military. Well, a Democratic and Republican senator are behind a bipartisan push for an amendment to block Donald Trump's transgender ban. Donald Trump's Defense Secretary James Mad Dog Mattis is pushing ahead with the administration's plans to ban trans people from the military. There have been so many different lawsuits, but Trump officials have already blocked recruitment of any military personnel who identify as transgender while they are working on plans to purge existing soldiers from next year. But there are two senators who are working across party lines to try and block the move. An amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, filed by Republican Senator Susan Collins and Democratic Senator Kristen Gillibrand, would prevent the Department of Defense from removing qualified service members from the armed forces based solely on their gender identity. Senator Gillibrand, who is the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Subcommittee on Personnel, said this, quote, "Any individual who wants to join our military and meets the standards should be allowed to serve. Gender identity should have nothing to do with it. I am proud to work with Senator Collins to introduce our bipartisan amendment to protect transgender members of our armed forces, and I will always fight for our brave transgender troops who put their lives on the line to protect our country." Senator Collins, again, this is Republican Senator Collins, said this, quote, "Our armed forces should welcome the service of any qualified individual who is willing and capable of serving our country. If individuals are willing to put on the uniform of our country, be deployed in war zones, and risk their lives for our freedoms, then we should be expressing our gratitude to them, not trying to exclude them from military service." Again, that's Senator Collins, who, along with Senator Gillibrand, trying to block the Donald Trump ban on trans people serving in the military. The amendment that they're proposing would prohibit the Department of Defense from involuntarily separating or denying the reenlistment or continuation in service in the armed forces of currently serving trans military members solely on the basis of their gender identity. So, gosh, I mean, you have individuals who, I mean, we just heard this right at the top of the show. This is what we've been talking about at the start of the show when we had our guest Rob Smith talk about his journey to joining the military. I mean, what a choice to make. I'm going to serve my country in this incredible, incredible way, rife with sacrifice aplenty. So much sacrifice. And I am making this decision to serve my country. And the President of the United States makes a statement, doesn't even make a statement, tweets, "I am not fit to serve." That I, in some way, decrease the readiness of our military. And that is the message being sent to all of our trans brothers and sisters. I will add the added complication, and I'll be writing about this coming up very, very soon in the next week in an online publication. It's really tricky on a college campus. So you're working on a college campus that has a non-discrimination statement, as our college campus does. So our college campus has a non-discrimination statement that says we will not discriminate based on the criteria of gender identity or gender expression. And then we invite on ROTC. And then we invite on military recruiters. And what is it we're saying to our trans students? Sorry. Yes, these people are absolutely going to discriminate against you, but there's nothing that we can do about it. So we will see what happens with this amendment, but it just blows my mind. I'm not someone who is going to make that choice. I'm not prepared to make that choice to serve in the military. And these individuals are making that choice, and still they are being told, I'm sorry, you cannot serve. You are not fit to serve. So, more news on the trans front. A Christian group is raising money. That's right, a Christian group is raising money to help transgender people pay for gender-affirming surgeries. Faithfully LGBT, which is a group that represents Christian allies, they have started a campaign called hashtag tithe trans. That's hashtag tithe trans. Trans, TITHETRANS. It is their aim of gathering $10,000 by the end of September. The proceeds will be donated to the Jim Collins Foundation, which is a charity founded by trans people, which gives grants towards other people's gender-affirming surgeries. The campaign has already raised more than $1,000 in a really, really short amount of time, just hours, and it was launched just days after Donald Trump's advisors signed the Nashville Statement. The Nashville Statement is a so-called Christian manifesto. It was signed by 150 evangelical Christian leaders, and it states that homosexual immorality and transgenderism are sinful. Eliel Cruz, who founded Faithfully LGBT, said this fundraising effort was in direct response to the Nashville Statement, and along with a general trend, it goes with this general trend that has seen evangelical leaders come out against LGBT rights. Last month, it was found that just one-third of white evangelicals believe that homosexuality should be accepted by society, compared to a majority of Muslims believing the same principle. Cruz told the Huffington Post this quote, "I found that many LGBT Christians give their tithe money back to LGBT people instead of the church, since broadly speaking, the evangelical church isn't doing anything to help the needs of LGBT people." So yeah, they are raising money. That's hashtag tithe trans. It looks like they will raise $10,000 by the end of the month. Our condolences go out to family and friends in San Francisco of a well-known LGBTQ activist who was shot dead in San Francisco. Anthony Torres, who was also known by his gender non-conforming drag ego Bubbles, was a DJ, an artist, and an activist for the local LGBTQ community. Torres specifically focused on trans rights and often performed in drag. The 44-year-old was shot in the early hours of Saturday morning. This was last Saturday. A suspect has not yet been identified by police, but they are not treating the incident as a hate crime. Torres was playing music in a venue, and some witnesses claim that the shooter came from the New Century Strip Club opposite where he was playing. They said that the shooter approached him. They began arguing before he was shot. Friends and family of Torres told ABC News that Torres was great and that they were devastated by the loss. John Silverman said of Torres, the activist, quote, "He would always wear drag. I would never talk to him, but I loved him. He was great. He brought a lot of energy to the neighborhood. This is an exciting block, so he brought the excitement, but this is terrible." Jim Riley, another close friend and Torres' lawyer, urged for police to investigate thoroughly. Jim Riley said this quote, "People are just upset that Bubbles, who was somebody who was loved for his activism, for his art, and for how giving of a person he was, would be targeted in a fashion of this and gunned down in these streets in the Tenderloin, which is a neighborhood that's supposed to be accepting and supportive of transgender individuals." So, again, our condolences to all the family and friends of Bubbles there in San Francisco. Beverly Hills 90210 actor Brian Austin Green, holy heck did I love him, he has come to the defense of his young son after critics attacked the family for letting his son wear a Frozen dress. The popular Disney film burst onto all of our screens in 2013 and became a favorite, of course, of children across the globe. With it came plenty of merchandise, including dresses suitable for all children. Megan Fox, who is married to and has children with Green, shared some Polaroid snaps on Instagram, one of which showed their 4-year-old son Noah wearing a dress from the franchise. The picture drew unwarranted criticism from followers. I'm not even going to say what the followers said, but they said really not great things. Well, speaking in an interview with Hollywood Pipeline, Brian Austin Green, I love even saying his name, it brings me right back to 90210 days. Well, Brian Austin Green came to the defense of his family and insisted that their child would always be able to wear what he felt like. Brian Austin Green said this quote, "He's 4, and if he wants to wear it, then he wears it. It's his life. They're not my clothes. Obviously, I don't wear the nice stuff. I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt. I feel like at 4 or 5, that's a time when he should be having fun. He's not harming anyone wearing a dress. So if he wants to wear a dress, awesome. Good on him." That is from Brian Austin Green. Love that. Yes, I would expect that you would support your son, but I love seeing you doing it publicly in this way. Let's go back to politics. Kid Rock, Who knew we would be talking about Kid Rock? Well, Kid Rock has apparently launched his rumored run for the U.S. Senate, and he opened his run for the U.S. Senate with an anti-LGBT rant, because how else are you going to do it if you're Kid Rock? Following off the back of Donald Trump's election, outspoken Republican musician Kid Rock, he has been rumored, long rumored, to be making a bid for the Senate. His real name, Robert Ritchie, he's reportedly planning to run in the U.S. Senate election in Michigan next November, seeking to unseat incumbent Democrat Debbie Stabenow. Polling has shown he has massive support among the GOP base despite his lack of experience or policy knowledge or stated political agenda. Kid Rock opened his apparent campaign this week with a concert in Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, Michigan. At the concert, the singer was introduced as, quote, the next senator of the great state of Michigan, Kid Rock, even though he didn't officially announce a campaign. In a four-minute speech, he made time for a diatribe on LGBT rights. He said this, quote, and why these days is everything so gay? Gay rights, transgender this and that. I say, let gay folks get married if they want, and I'm not even close to a death trap. But things shouldn't be this complicated, and no, you don't get to choose, because whatever you have between your legs should determine the bathroom that you use. And that comment that he made was loudly cheered, and so he kept going. He said, quote, it's no secret we're divided, and we all should take some blame. We should be ashamed because we all seem scared to call Jesus by his name. So please, Almighty Jesus, if you're looking down tonight, please guide us with your wisdom and give us the strength to fight the tyrant evils that lurk here and abroad, and remind us all we are still just one nation under God. That is Kid Rock, who found time in launching his Senate bid to make some anti-LGBT statements. Well done, Kid Rock. And by that I mean, not really well done. Transgender activist Chelsea Manning has been named as a visiting fellow at Harvard. Look at that. Chelsea Manning, named a visiting fellow at Harvard, where she will speak about LGBTQ identity. Former soldier Chelsea Manning is best known as the source of leaked documents that exposed alleged U.S. war crimes. She served 7 years behind bars for whistleblowing. In one of his final acts as president, Barack Obama commuted the sentence of Private Chelsea Manning, who had been imprisoned in Fort Leavenworth military prison. Manning came out as a transgender woman in 2013 and had been denied the right to transition behind bars, leading her to make several suicide attempts. Since leaving prison, she has spoken out frequently on LGBT rights and civil liberties. This week, the activist was announced as a visiting fellow at Harvard. Bill Delahunt, the acting director at Harvard's Institute of Politics, said this, quote, broadening the range and depth of opportunity for students to hear from and engage with experts, leaders, and policy shapers is a cornerstone of the Institute of Politics. We welcome the breadth of thought-provoking viewpoints on race, gender, politics, and the media. Look at that. Emily Hall and Jason G, who are the co-chairs of the IOP Fellows and Study Groups program, said this, quote, visiting fellows will be able to fulfill the Institute's mission of engaging students in discourse on topical issues of today, including issues of LGBTQ identity in the military with Chelsea Manning. This unique opportunity to closely engage with our visiting fellows will surely shape the semester, and we hope many students will participate in the upcoming events and discussions. That would be Chelsea Manning, just named as a visiting fellow at Harvard. Pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. Our kudos to Sir Elton John. Sir Elton John is set to celebrate 25 years. Can't believe it. 25 years of the Elton John AIDS Foundation. The singer, pianist, and entertainer has found global fame for his performing, with millions going to see his live shows, of course, all around the world. But for the past 25 years, he has also dedicated a huge amount of his time to tackling the stigma against HIV and AIDS and helping those with the infection. This non-for-profit was created in 1992, and then in 1993, he set up shop in the UK as well. It has been recognized as the largest HIV funder of programs for transgender people. The organization is now set to mark its 25-year anniversary with a huge show in New York. Neil Patrick Harris is set to host. Aretha Franklin is going to sing. President Bill Clinton's going to be there. Governor Andrew Cuomo, Sharon Stone, tons of people. The Elton John AIDS Foundation Executive Director Scott Campbell said this, quote, at this time of great great uncertainty in the world, our foundation's work is more important than ever. After 25 years, we remain steadfastly committed to addressing the unmet needs of people living with and affected by HIV and AIDS, and fighting stigma as a major driver of the global AIDS epidemic. We believe that everyone living with HIV and AIDS should have immediate access to high-quality medical care, and all people at risk of HIV should be empowered with the best knowledge and tools available to prevent transmission, no matter who they are, who they love, where they come from, or what they do. 25 years of the Elton John AIDS Foundation. Incredible, incredible work. More New York City news. A secular temple dedicated to Oscar Wilde has opened up in New York after 20 years of planning. The site of worship, which is based in the basement of a church in the East Village, right there in New York City, will be open for 5 days a week to visitors. It will also be available for private ceremonies, including weddings. The landmark site has been created by artists David McDermott and Peter McGow, who also lived for years like Victorians, wearing top hats and high starched collars. I have to laugh at that. And they opted to remove electricity and a series of other conveniences from their New York City apartment. This new temple includes a centerpiece altar built around a more than 4-foot statue of Oscar Wilde and contains effects including a pedestal inscribed with his prisoner number after he was arrested for gross indecency in 1895. Curator Allison Gingeris said this, quote, "He invoked all of us to rebel, that it was the inherent quality of human beings to be rebellious, to move society, to be individual." I love that. The walls also depict illustrations of tabloid headlines about Wilde during his lifetime, as well as portraits of iconic figures Brandon Tina, Marsha P. Johnson, and Alan Turing. That's in the East Village, a temple dedicated to Oscar Wilde. By the way, speaking of Marsha P. Johnson, I have to watch it. I haven't seen it yet. Apparently, there is an incredible documentary on Marsha P. Johnson right there on Netflix. So we all should go check that out. How about a story from Israel? I don't know that we've ever had a story from Israel. An ultra-Orthodox Jewish member of Israel's parliament has resigned after prominent rabbis criticized him for attending his gay nephew's wedding. Yigal Guetta revealed in a radio interview last weekend that he had gone to the ceremony 2 years ago. He said that although same-sex marriage was against his religious beliefs, he had wanted to make his nephew happy. But five rabbis accused Mr. Guetta of desecrating God's name and demanded that the religious Shah's party fire him. Same-sex weddings held in Israel are not sanctioned by the state. However, couples who wed abroad can register officially as married couples. In his interview with Army Radio, Mr. Guetta explained why he had chosen to attend his nephew's wedding. He said this, quote, "I told my kids before we went, you should know that we're going in order to make him happy because he's my sister's son and she's my sister and I want to embrace her. But the Torah says this relationship is forbidden and an abomination." Then he added, "What can you do? My own judgment is irrelevant here." And so he went to his gay nephew's wedding to make his nephew happy, and he had to resign from Parliament. Things are different in different places. They're also a lot like they are here sometimes, depending on where you live in the U.S. Advocacy groups are now hoping to derail President Trump's nominee to run NASA over his history of anti-LGBT stances, including criticism of same-sex marriage as, quote, contrary to millennia of human experience, and his description of bathroom protections for transgender people as, quote, lawless federal bullying. Representative Jim Bridenstine, who is a Republican congressman from Oklahoma and a former Navy pilot, has drawn praise across the space community for his thoughtfulness on space policy and support for both traditional government programs and new private sector ventures. But lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender advocates are now trying to thwart his nomination based on his controversial social stances, as they did with one of Trump's nominees for Army Secretary. Matt Thorne, the executive director of OutServe SLDN, which represents the LGBT military community, said this, quote, "It is rather hypocritical to have an individual so entrenched in his idea of traditionalism to be nominated to lead an agency that has for almost 60 years pushed to expand our understanding and knowledge. NASA is rich in diversity. Representative Bridenstine doesn't have that same view. The Senate should block this nomination." So that is the nomination of Representative Jim Bridenstine. He's got some controversial views on climate change. And yes, he opposes same-sex marriage. He is a traditionalist. So let's nominate him for the very progressive and forward-looking NASA. How do things work out like this? Not really sure, but we'll find out. A transgender woman has undergone a revolutionary vaginal surgery that she helped to invent. Haley Anthony is a 30-year-old marketing consultant. She has become one of the first people in the world to have a piece of tissue taken from the cavity of her abdomen and turned into a vagina. And it was her idea which sparked the groundbreaking procedure. In autumn of 2015, after talking it through with her therapist, Haley was preparing to undergo the standard procedure for trans bottom surgery. Her doctor, Jess Ting, who is the director of surgery at the Center for Transgender Medicine and Surgery at Mount Sinai, will cut open the penis and remove most of the insides. He would then fold the penile skin into the space between the urethra and the rectum. In the procedure, the outside of the penis becomes the inside of the vagina. Haley told Wired magazine this quote, "I had gone into the process eyes wide open, understanding all the compromises and willing to accept them. But after doing more research, she discovered a different way of doing it, and now she will be the first in the world to have this type of surgery." We love advances. Very cool advances. And finally, Mary Ali Martinez and her wife Carla Melendez have both given birth within a month of each other, with their friends Junie Roman and Alex Torres as sperm donors. The catch? Junie and Alex are also married. While researching donor options, Martinez and Melendez realized they didn't want to use a sperm bank. They wanted the dad to be a part of their children's life, so they asked their friend Torres. The couple had known Torres for 10 years and reconnected with him when they moved to Florida. Both women wanted to carry a baby, but initially they had planned for Torres to father both children. However, when they met his husband, Roman, they changed their minds. Mary Ellie knew she wanted him to be a dad. She loved his personality and everything about them. And after going through their pregnancy together, Martinez and Melendez have their perfect, unusual family. They had healthy children. Everybody's involved. It's such a happy story. And of course, we want to end on a story like that because we love happy stories. So look, so much stuff to tell you guys. First, of course, our thanks to Rob Smith. He's doing incredible work. You must get out there and go pick up his book, Confessions of a Don't Ask, Don't Tell Soldier, How a Black Gay Man Survived the Infantry, Coming Out, and the War in Iraq. You can go check that out. It's really an incredible read. It's totally up to date when it reflects everything that's going on, including these tweets about trans people serving in the military. So go check that out. Confessions of a Don't Ask, Don't Tell Soldier, How a Black Gay Man Survived the Infantry, Coming Out, and the War in Iraq. While you're there on Amazon, might I recommend my own book? You can pick up my book. It's called Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Adventures of a Wondering and Wandering Gay Jew. Amazon does some really weird pricing things, so right this very second, I don't know by the time you listen to this when you go to Amazon to check it out, but right this very second, the hardcover is actually cheaper than the paperback. So you can get a more durable copy, and there you go. Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Adventures of a Wondering and Wandering Gay Jew. It would mean the world to me if you picked it up. And if I'm not the one to convince you, just read the reviews on Amazon. I think those are going to convince you. It's pretty cool. The feedback has been incredible, unbelievably humbling, and I want you guys to check it out as well. Our thoughts are with just all of our past guests of the show. We've had so many past guests on the show who were so close to Edie Windsor. I think the most notable of them all was Kathy Renna. Kathy Renna, I think, has actually been on the show more than any other guest that we've ever had in almost 10 years of the show. She's been on 7 or 8 times. She's such a great friend to our show. She does such incredible, incredible work in the wonderful world of PR. And she was so close to Edie Windsor. So our thoughts go out to Kathy Renna and, of course, to everybody who was able to interact with Edie Windsor and to our whole community, because Edie Windsor affected all of us. And I have to go right back to it and implore you again. You don't have to get out there and be the biggest hero. You don't have to learn a new trade. You don't have to learn a new skill. What you have to do is be authentic. If you've been wronged in some way, it requires that you stand up and say, you know what? I'm not going to stand for this. I won't be treated in this way. I want equality. I want equity. I want inclusion. I want all of those things. You don't have to learn something new. Just use your voice the way you know how to do it to make a difference. By the way, if you are using your voice in a really cool way, get in touch with us. Send me an email, ken@thisshowisogay.com. That's ken@thisshowisogay.com. We would love to get your voice on our show. Or if you know of somebody else who's doing something cool in your community, just drop me an email. We will reach out to them. We would love to get them on their show. We're not stopping anytime soon. There are too many other cool people who are doing amazing things, and you need to do the same. I'm doing what I know how to do. You have to do what you know how to do. Get out there. Go use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, for all of our allies out there. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?